it's Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Unlimited Life. We have such a special and such an extraordinary show for you today. When we created this show a little over 2 years ago, it was our greatest dream and desire and goal to bring you the very top experts in the world that had the keys, the tools, the secrets, the doorways, the pathways, and the know-how of how to live an unlimited life, an unbridled life, a life without boundaries or borders, and how you get to the other side of any situation and really live that kind of life you dream of, desire, and deserve. And today's guest has certainly figured out a key and a technique to be able to get people to the other side of their visions and their dreams. Today we're talking with Bill Kakmus, and Bill is a show whisperer. And not only do I absolutely love his work, but I've been a fan for years, a friend for years, and he's one of my favorite people on the planet. And I have watched this incredible journey along the way of celebrities, of sportscasters, of news people, of athletes, and how he's able to open up and actually get the talent to be able to peacock in a way, spread their wings, and share their gifts and their talents at the highest levels and unravel almost any situation in show business. And so I'm so excited to bring him on and to hear about this journey and how he can help you get to the other side of your visions and your dreams. So, Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Nicole. I appreciate it.
Oh, my gosh. So, I mean, you've done everything. You are an author. You are a coach. You are a director. And one of my favorite questions to ask people is the did you know factor. When you were 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, when other boys wanted to be firemen or veterinarians or whatever it is, football players, did you always have the ability to be able to see what was wrong or to help people or had an eye for talent and creativity and craft? Or was it something along the way that sort of you fell into and changed your life?
I was just talking about this the other day because I was supposed to be in Baltimore with a client, and when the riots broke out there, I had to wait a week before going in, and we were having this conversation. But when I was very little, I remember standing in front of the television and seeing Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. do his I Have a Dream speech, and certainly at the time, I was very young, so I didn't quite know what was going on. But what I did know is that this man was communicating in such a way that even at my age, I was inspired. It was passionate, and people followed him. And at that point, at that age, I was enamored with the idea of being able to do that and being able to help other people do that. And I think, you know, God gives everybody something. I just happen to get that thing where I can look at something, or I will look at something and know how to fix it. And so you put those two things together, and I always remember being that kid that wasn't in the play but directed the play. wasn't part of the fight of the kids that were playing combat, but I was actually I would be the general. You know, I would put everybody in their positions and make sure that they fought correctly. and then all could win at the end of the day. So, it was just always a part of who I was, and it wasn't something that I necessarily, there is no one class or one academic credit that creates this. I followed it and would read books on it and would practice it, and over the years, it just manifested into, you know, what I do today.
That's amazing. I love that it was Martin Luther King, and I love that you can go back to I Have a Dream speech, because I think that that's what you do, is all of these people that have visions and dreams, you help them bring them to reality, and you find out what the missing piece is or the missing peg is. And so when you started directing, would you look at somebody's talent and say, this is how to open that jar, like the pickle jar or whatever, this, you know, that's having difficulty opening and be able to pop open the energy? Or were you looking at the story and saying, okay, this is how this information needs to be shared with the audience or the world?
Well, you know, 80% of directing is casting. So if you cast the right people, then a lot of your work is done. And people, when they're born, any craftsman, whether they're any kind of an artist or any kind of a craftsman, there are really two parts to a craftsman. One is talent and the other part is technique. You're born with talent. That's another thing that's just God-given. You can't buy it, create it. Nobody can give you talent. You either have talent or you don't have talent. Some people have a lot, some people have a little, but what you're born with, you have. I had a parent ask me a couple of weeks ago if I could, if they could hire me to give their child talent. I said, you know what? I have been gifted to do many things, but that's just not one of them. So what I do, what I am able to do, is to give people technique so that their talent shows itself. And I'm working right now with a Titan, one of the football players on the Titan team, and he's been playing ball for 20 years. And I was watching them practice last year, and afterwards, I said to the guy, "You've got to hate practice, because these guys, the way they practice, it's amazing they get through it. It's very arduous, and it takes a physique that not many people have." And in any case, I said, "You must hate practice." He said, "I love practice." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because it allows me to fall on my butt." And I said, "Now, why would you want to do that?" And he said, "Because it's the only time I can learn anything." He said, "The only time you learn anything is when you fall on your butt." He said, "And I can't do that in a game, because that's my career. I don't want to lose my career, so I do everything within the parameters of what I know I can do, you know, with my my abilities." But the idea that 87% of an athlete's career is practice, the game is nothing to them, because when they get on the field, they can't be thinking about technique. They have to be able to throw that away and just be in the moment and allow all of their talent to show itself. So what I do as a director, as a coach, as a teacher, is try to ascertain a person's talents and then give them the techniques I think will allow them to show that talent in the best way possible. If I can do that, then they will service the story, because I hired them to service the story in the first place. So it's more about them and their talent than it is about the story. Did I answer your question?
You did. That was a perfect answer. That was a beautiful answer. And as you're talking about athletes and working with athletes, no, it was perfect. You know, I know that you've worked with actors and anchors and television show hosts and singers and doctors and lawyers and CEOs and politicians. And so how does that work? I mean, do people find you when they're ready to start? They're going to say, "I'm going to start a political career, and so I want to make sure I have the best skills possible." Or do people find you when their ratings drop, or when they're stuck and they don't know what to say next? When is the right time to pick up the phone and say, "Bill Cagnes, SOS"?
The smartest time is to pick up the phone and call me before they get on the field, whatever field of career that they're in. That's the smartest time. However, probably 80% of what I do is fixing problems. 80% of what I do is after things start to go awry and they can find no other way to fix it, I get a call. And I go in to ascertain the problem and fix it. So now, fortunately for me, thank goodness, there are problems like that, and that keeps me working. However, if people were smart, you know, what, as soon as they begin a show, I would come in at the beginning. Many times, I will get called once every couple of months. Someone will call me and say, we have a host problem. And they have hired a host to host a talk show or some kind of a show, radio show, what have you. And they hired that person because they were a star at another profession. They are a name at something else, whether they're an athlete, whether they're a performer or what have you. And suddenly they think, okay, we're going to take that name and we're going to market this show based on that name. However, that person, although they were fabulous at whatever they were doing, they're not a show host. And a show host has very specific there's very specific talent, there's very specific techniques involved. If you've never read a prompter before, a prompter is hard to do. There's a talent and a technique to reading a prompter. There's a talent and a technique, as you know, because you're very good at it, to talk to guests and to ascertain the right kinds of questions to ask the guest and to pull what you need out of the guest. There's a technique and a talent to that, and not everybody has it. So many times I'm called in because they've hired somebody, they've started a show. No show, no production company, once a show has started, wants the audience to know or the studio to know that there's a problem. So they will sneak me in through the back door to fix something before, and hope to goodness that it all works out before they have to either let somebody go or tell the studio that they've made a mistake.
It's amazing. I'm getting this Max Smart kind of an image of you being shuffled in through the back door. I'm getting like a Max Smart kind of image of you being shuffled in through the back door, sort of behind the sets and the scenes.
All the time.
And I know that...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, absolutely. What were you saying all the
time?
I
was saying that one time I was called in to work on a show, and the executive producer, after I finished working, I worked there for a week, and the executive producer came up to me and said, listen, I just want to let you know that you did a great job, but I said something about you I shouldn't have said. And I said, what did you say? And he said, well, the network, which was Fox, the network came in and saw you on stage working with our host, and they came up to me and they said, who the heck is this guy? Because, you know, a production company never wants the studio to know there's a problem. And so he got caught, and Fox came in and said, who's this guy? And the executive producer was Nigel Lithgow. He was the executive producer of American Idol for many, many years, and he's the judge on So You Think You Can Dance. In any case, Nigel said, I said something about you I shouldn't have said. And I said, what did you say? And he said, well, I got caught. When they asked me who you were, I didn't know what to tell them. I said, Nigel, what did you tell them? And he said, I said you were a host whisperer. And that was the first time I got that title. And it was from Nigel Lithgow. So to this day, I both thank Nigel, and, you know, we have a running joke about that. But he gave me that title. So thank you, Nigel.
That's amazing. And I love the title host whisperer because I really think that is what you do. And I mean, I've heard so many of your stories, which are so rich and colorful and so vast and so different. And in reading the testimonials, I've been on so many websites doing these shows for years and years, and I've never been on a website that has the kind of testimonials that you have and the words that people use to describe you about your introspection or your observation or your keen eye and talent or your ability to fix things or self-confidence and self-worth and value and being able to make things work. It's just unbelievable and so phenomenal that you've been able to reach so many different genres and venues and be able to help so many people to success. It's really amazing. It's awesome.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that one reason I've been blessed to have that kind of response is that the people I work with know that I am not there to just talk and give them my perspective, but I am there. I always make sure that they understand I'm there for them. I find out who they are, what their motivations are, what their goals are, and everything that I do for every person that I work with is based on their needs, their wants, their desires. And so it, at the end of the day, if there's one thing that I would tell everybody, anybody that I'm working with, is that a cornerstone of what I coach and what I teach and what I believe in is the idea that it's not about you. It's not about you. So when I'm working with somebody and they're nervous, the reason they're nervous many times is because they're worried about themselves. How do I look? How do I sound? Am I doing well? Do they like me? And the only times in life, or the biggest times in life, where we get nervous and we're not ourselves and we don't do a good job is when we're worried about ourselves. So interviews, first dates, public speaking, these are the times when people get crazy. And learning that there needs to be outflow instead of inflow. It needs to, once you're in that situation, if you do what you would do with your best friend, which is just talk to them and not concern yourself about who you are and what you are, suddenly a lot of those nerves go away. So in the same respect, when I'm working with people, I put myself in their position and I try to take myself out of the equation and make it about them. And I really believe that's why they trust what we're doing and why we get farther faster, because they know and understand that it's my concern is their success.
That's so perfect. And I guess that's fabulous, because it leads right into my next question, was the ego. So you're working with a celebrity who is kind of used to doing it their way and thinks it's perfect and is quite sure that, you know, no other way is even an inkling or a possibility. How do you go up against ego?
Well, I have a story that I tell. Dick Clark had me come in and work with a host of his years ago. And he had me fly, and he said, we have a host problem, like I said. And this time, women don't like our host. So I had to take a look at the show, and I told Dick, some of it is I need to work with the producers on the writing. I need to work with the director on shooting it a little better. And I need to work with this host because he doesn't know how to host a show, and he doesn't know how to treat women. He would do things like women would – they would introduce a big star, female star, and he wouldn't get up from his desk. And she would have to walk all the way over to the couch, and he would say, "Sit down, honey." And then she would, So of course, women didn't like the way he was treating female viewers didn't like the way he was treating his female guests. And he wasn't meaning to do it. It's just he didn't know any better as a host. So Dick asked me to come in and work with him. And I flew in and met Dick, and Dick said, "Okay, I'm going to take you and introduce you to this host." Took me into the host's office, introduced us, and then Dick left. And before I could say a word, this host said to me, "I just want to tell you one thing." And I said, "What?" He said, "I'm not changing." And I said, "What do you mean? What do you mean you're not changing?" And he looked at me and he said, "I like," and then he pointed to himself and he said his name, "Joe Schmo." He said, "I like Joe Schmo." And he said, he kept pointing to himself, and he said, "Joe Schmo isn't changing." And I went, "Okay." He said, I guess we're done." He said, "I guess we are." I said, "You could have said that with Dick in the room." He said, "You go tell him." I said, "All right." So I turned around to walk out. Right before I left, I turned back to this guy and I said, I just have one question." He said, "What?" I said, "Which Joe Schmo are you talking about?" He said, "The Joe Schmo sitting in front of you." Oh, by the way, he didn't get up when I came into the room. He said, "The Joe Schmo sitting in front of you." I said, I understand that. But I said, "Do you speak the same way that Dick, that you do to your wife?" He said, "No." I said, "Do you speak the same way to your wife you do to your mother?" He said, "No." I said, "So which one of those is the real Joe Schmo and which is the lie?" He said, "They're not lies. They're all me." I said, "I don't understand." He said, "Well, you change who you are depending on who you're talking to succeed in that situation." And I said, "That's right." I said, "My job here is not to find out to make you someone else. My job is to find the best Joe Schmo possible for this show. But you know what?" I said, "You're right. We're done." And I turned around to walk out, and he went, "Well, now, wait a minute." And then we worked together for 40 years.
So
many times it's you know, you don't working with big personalities who feel like they're right before you begin, instead of just coming in and headbutting with them because it's silly, that's why I'm there, because no one else could do it, the first thing I have to do is find out what their motivations are, what they believe in, what they consider to be successful, and then use that to get them to understand that I'm just there to help them. So there you go.
Wow. What an incredible story. That's amazing.
Yeah. It doesn't end.
Oh, wow. And then what about the other side? So what about before someone's ego comes to play? What about the young band that's just being picked up by a contract, or a young college athlete that now is going to stick his foot in his mouth at an interview? Do you get that talent as well?
You know, I work with a lot of young performers in Nashville because that's where a lot of music is happening now, and a lot of new singers and new bands are forming. And a lot of these younger people, younger performers that are first beginning, all they've learned how to do so far is they've sat on their bed in their bedroom for 20 years playing guitar and learning how to sing, and then their family has told them how wonderful they are. But they've never trained or understood how to speak to an audience, how to socialize in an event, whether it's a social gathering or it's on stage. So that kind of communication, they haven't trained for. And especially with country music, it's as much about the relationship with the listener and the fan as it is about the music. And many times performers haven't trained for that. So early on, you know, when they first come in, I will mock up a session where I will get the performer sometimes they'll do what's called a radio tour. They'll go around the country, go to radio stations, and they will play their music for the general manager and the staff of the radio station. And if there's a good rapport, if they like each other, when their record is released, then the radio station will play it. So I will mock up a session and just to see how they do. And just a while back, I had a young guy, great voice, great lyricist, nice guy, came in and he sat down, and we mocked up the session. He sat down, and there was this guy pretending to be a GM, his staff, the whole thing. And the kid sat down, picked up his guitar. He looked at the group of people there, and the first thing he said was, "Forgive me, two Polacks walk into a bar." And he told a Polish joke. And everyone's jaw dropped. Everyone just could not believe this was actually happening. And this kid thought he was being just hilarious. And at the end of the mock-up session, when I sat down with him and his management, I said, "Look, if you want to upset everyone in the room, I have some great racist jokes that are up to date. I mean, why tell a joke that was from the 50s? You know, but I'm making a point with them that that, you know, the last thing he should be doing is and this kid said to me, he's a young guy, and he said, hey, my father loves that joke. And I said, well, your father's not in the room. And so these young performers who are just coming out of maybe a small town and all they know is that. They don't know and understand that people that the fans or people that are listening to them aren't going to have their reality. They need to have the reality of the fans who are listening. So, you know, early on, teaching them how to understand who their fans are, teaching them how to get into that mindset, and learning how to deliver and to communicate in a way that's broad and general and takes in, embraces the people that are listening and not your own reality. Does that make sense?
Oh, perfect sense. Unbelievable. And when you talk about this kid, and you started at the top of the show talking about parents that were asking you if you can give their child talent, which I love.
Right.
Is there a too old or a too young? I mean, do you work with kids and elderly people, or is there a perfect age spot for you?
The youngest kids that I work with are, right now I have a girl that's 7, and she's very, very talented, and she's extremely, she's got all kinds of potential, and she's just a wonderful kid. I can work with kids that are younger, but I think that there's for me at least, there's a certain amount of time where they need to have a little bit of a development with their own families before I start working with them. But, you know, it kind of depends on the situation. I had a father a while back asked me to work with his son, and his son was 17. And I said, well, you know, if they're under 18, my first meeting, I like to have a parent or parents, you know, with me with the child on the first meeting if they're under 18. And there's no law, but I just like to do that for everyone's peace of mind and so that everyone, you know, we're all on the same page. So the father said, fine, and he brought his 17-year-old. And the first time we met at a Starbucks. And I sat with his son, and then the father sat a few tables away. And as I'm talking to this 17-year-old boy, who was is very nice, but as I'm talking to him, and I maybe, you know, those little tables at Starbucks, they're very small, so you're maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet away from the person. As I'm talking to this guy, he is sneaking looks and glances at his cell phone, which is right underneath the table, as if I can't see what he's doing. So while I'm talking to him, I don't know what he's checking, his Twitter, or he's texting, who knows. But for 20 minutes as I'm talking to him, he's looking at me, but then he's glancing down and looking at his phone. And after the meeting, I took his father aside, and I said, listen, I can't work with your son, I'm sorry. And he said, why? I said, because I can teach a 12-year-old how to focus. I cannot teach a 17-year-old how to focus. I said, at this point, that's something that has to fall on your plate. I don't have time. I mean, I could, but I would be spending all my time, you know, teaching, you know, someone at that age how to focus is something that should have been done. So what I like to tell parents is, if you want your child to get in, especially in any kind of a profession where you're entertaining people, whether it's theater, on stage, at a podium, in front of a camera, there needs to be a certain amount of focus, otherwise they won't last long. I have a great friend, directs a lot of television, a lot of these procedural television shows like NCIS and those shows, he's been directing for years, and he works constantly. And I asked him, if there was one thing I could tell my students about being on the set, if they get on the set and they can do a show and you're directing, what would I tell them? And I thought he was going to tell me about, you know, how to prep for a role, you know, about how to work with the other actors. And he said to me, please tell your students that if they get on my set, don't bring their cell phones with them or I'll fire them. And he has let some people go because they were on set texting as he was trying to give direction. And it's this split focus that's happening now because of technology that is making it much more difficult for people to be unique. To be unique takes time. It takes time when you're growing up to learn whatever you're trying to become a professional at or master. It takes time. It takes effort and time. And unfortunately, in today's world, technology takes time away from younger people. It steals that time that they should be using to perfect a craft. And it's a very unfortunate thing because I think technology is wonderful and awesome. However, as a parent, I think sometimes we allow technology to steal too much of our children's time, and it leaves them little time to actually master a craft.
Mm-hmm. What a brilliant answer. And how extraordinary for somebody to say that on the set. Just tell them not to bring their phones. I mean, that's so simple, but something so effective and makes such a difference in the show.
It makes a difference in the show and the relationships and the working environment. It's a huge thing. Yeah.
And then when you talk about your unique genre, your unique beingness, your unique soul, your unique gift, your unique talent, I know that you teach a masterclass for actors and singers and presenters, and I mean, you were just most successful talent coach I know. And I was reading one of the testimonials and it talked about, you know, I believe he said that I can't begin to say how much Bill Kaekmus coaching has meant to my career, you know, and talked about that he learned from you in 2 or 3 sessions. He learned more than he learned on his own in 15 years and how your techniques were amazing, that you were the coach to go to, which I absolutely love. And that was an Emmy-winning nominee. I mean, just, right? I mean, unbelievable that people share that. And so can you talk for a minute about your masterclass?
I think that the reason I get that kind of a response, and thank you very much. I appreciate that. And again, I think I'm blessed with those kinds of responses because many people teach results. They coach results. They'll say, you need to smile here, or you need to have more energy there, or you need to be more frenetic here. And a result-oriented coaching is really more about the coach than it is about the talent, than it is about the person that you're working with. The idea when I coach is I do everything that I can to make the work organic, so that if somebody smiles, it comes from the feeling that they have about whatever they're doing, whether it's speaking or acting or performing, that it's inside out. So to connect a master class when we get to that point, it's really finding the connection of that person's being, that person's character, that person's soul, that person's mindset, that connection that they have with all of those elements of their being to the material. And then once that connection is made, then whatever those feelings are will manifest themselves in body language and facial expression and tonality. And so when somebody says, I need more personality. Well, if you look at personality in the dictionary, a good dictionary, not the internet, but an actual physical book, if you look up the word personality, I'll paraphrase, but it says something like the totality of elements that make up a person. Is their personality, you know, the totality of all of the characteristics that make up a human being. Now, that's fascinating when you think about it, because most people think personality is happy or personality is peppy. But personality is you all the pathos and the drama and the humor and everything that we know that connects us to our humanity, all of those things put together create a personality. So many times what I'm doing when I'm working with someone is to delve into what their personality is, you know, what characteristics really come forth, and then attach those to their work. I just had the pleasure of working with Debbie Fields, who is Mrs. Fields Cookies. So, and you know, she was doing a new speech, and I guess she's spoken so many times that to find a new way to say things that, you know, you've said many times before. And one of the things that happens sometimes with people, because I do work with a lot of young upcoming people, but I also work with people that have been, you know, at the top of their profession and have been working for 20, 30 years, 40 years, whatever. And with those people, it's more about bringing a freshness to the work and rediscovering the juice and the reason that they started doing it in the first place, the kick that they got when they first got involved in whatever it is that they're doing. And once they find that and can put that back into the work, then it becomes brand new again. And you know this as well as anyone, that, you know, there are only 7 stories on the planet. And we just keep telling them over and over again. But there are only 7. And so the idea is that you're not going to say anything that people haven't heard before. It doesn't exist. And we've heard everything. So it's not about the story. And I tell every storyteller that I work with, every great storyteller knows that every story you ever tell is about one thing. Every song you ever sing is about one thing. And what that story is about, it's about the person you're talking to. It's not about the story. Because really, at the end of the day, a storyteller is telling a story to make a person feel, to make them react, to make them have an emotional or visceral response. That's what storytelling is. And they could tell anything. You know, Paul Harvey was a great radio personality for years, and if you remember Paul Harvey, the man could talk about dirt, and you would say, tell me more about dirt, Paul. If someone else would talk about dirt, you would say, it's dirt. Why are you telling me about dirt?
You know, that's so funny that you said that, because I'm sorry for interrupting you, but as you're talking about, you know, talking about dirt, and I remember that I was reading on your website one of your testimonials, and they were saying that they'll never forget their first coaching session, which was more than 12 years ago with you, which I think is extraordinary to begin with, to say I remember that moment in time 12 years ago, that they felt like you had read a biography of their life even before meeting you. And it was that ability, exactly what you're saying, to dig beyond the superficial, to communicate to the viewers what's real, so they weren't just reading to the news, but they were relating to the people they were telling the story to in a personal, individual way. And that they said they had no doubt that their success was owed to you. And so I love that. So now go back to Paul Harvey, because I love the fact that it was so concise to say, this is what happened. I took it away from myself, and it was about the people I was talking to in the process, and Bill taught me how to do that.
Right, right. And by the way, I don't know if you said it up front, but if anyone wants to go to the website, it's mylastname.com. So it's CAKMIS.com, which I would love people to visit if they'd like. The idea that you sit down with somebody and someone will say, how did you know my life? You just met me. How do you know this? And it's interesting that if you really sit and just let go of who you are and look at a person and listen to them, it's amazing how much you can get out of just doing that, and that you can grasp a person's humanity if you just let go of everything that's gone on in your life up to that moment and just be there in present time and listen. And that's, I think that's part of what, you know, good coaching, at least in my opinion, what good coaching is about is being able to really pay attention and listen to somebody. And once you know that and understand that, it's easier. I'm laughing because I just finished working with an athlete, another athlete, and we were talking about, you know, the first athlete that I got to have time with was Kenny Norton. I think you knew Kenny years ago, and
yes, love Kenny.
Yeah. He was such a sweet man, Adonis, big guy, sweet man. Kill you in a second, but a very nice guy. I remember Kenny saying, the hardest thing about winning is once you win, you're not allowed to lose. You have to keep winning. And I remember asking him, well, then why do you do it? And then Kenny did his Kenny thing. He said, hey, babe, it's what I do. I win, it's what I do. You know, and but to think that so many of these athletes early on in their career did something stellar, and then they spend the rest of their life chasing after it. However, it's who they are. It's just who they are. It's what they do. So, when I'm working with people, and again, it doesn't really matter what the profession is, but if it's on stage at a podium in front of a camera, it's basically, you know, it's all the same in terms of the concepts of saying, look, you can't. I have performers who say to me, I would have done it better had there been more people in the audience, or I would have done it better had it been more important. And the lesson is you are who you are and you do what you do. There, you can't or shouldn't separate where you're going to be good and when you're going to be okay. Doesn't work that way. You need to be as good as you can be every single time, whether you're doing it for one person or whether you're doing it for 50,000 people. It's a matter of volume, but it's not a matter of value or how good I'm going to be. So that's an interesting. It's interesting that concept isn't held by everyone. But it's something that, you know, as a coach, that you push for. And, you know, you were an awesome athlete. You still are. And so I know that you understand that same thing, that no matter what you're doing, I remember you talking about skating and saying that when you get out on that ice, you are fervent about it and, you know, you go crazy, even if you're getting out there for 10 minutes. And that's the passion of a winner. That's the passion of a successful person. And so,
that's funny. When you talk about the commitment too, I just wanted to quickly share Ken Norton as we talk about Ken, you know, such a beloved man. And when I was very young, you know, and you knew me back then as well, and I lived in a building that had a security system that you would have to buzz people up. And I would never ask, who is it? Somebody would buzz and I'd automatically open the door. And Ken said, don't do that. You have to ask who it is. You don't know who you're letting in. Don't ever do that again. And I would say, okay. And then the next time he would come, I'd just let him in. And then he showed up on a random day. I was not expecting him to see if I would still, you know, if I was letting people up. He was so committed to my safety.
Right. That's hysterical. That's funny. And you let him up, right?
Yes.
Even on the off day, you just let him up?
I just let him up. But I learned very quickly that he was persistent in teaching me, which I love the fact that your persistence and your dedication and your heart. And I would love to talk about your book. Because I know, I mean, you've worked with everybody. You've worked with Patrick Swayze and Bob Goh and Dick Clark and all of these celebrities. And so tell me that impetus for writing. It's not what you say. And then tell me about the book and how people can find it, because I just love this idea.
Yes, it's called It's Not What You Say. And it's the impetus came to me when I one day I was just thinking that how fascinating that all of the professions that I work with, and you mentioned it, but actors and talk show hosts and politicians and religious leaders and doctors and lawyers and athletes, I started to find that there was a pattern, although they came from different places in their life, that they were in different high-profile professions, but there were certain things that they all would say that were almost virtually the same, even though they came from different walks of life and different professions. And so I started to realize that success had as much to do with technique as it did with their talent. And as a matter of fact, just because you're talented doesn't mean you're going to be successful. I know people, and we all knew people in high school that aggravated us because they were so talented and they never worked at it, and it would drive us nuts.
Right.
I remember playing football and the quarterback. He would party. He would never come to practice. He would do, but he was this. He had this God given talent, and it would aggravate you because you had to work at it. Of course, now he is not successful, and he doesn't really he's not successful in his life, and it's because he didn't learn the technique of being consistent, because consistency is everything. And there's an old saying, I always like to think it's Greek because my grandmother used to say it to me in Greek all the time. But I don't know if it's Greek, but I would like to think so. She would say, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. That's the best way I can translate that. But don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Because people who attempt perfection will always fail. People who attempt to be good, that you can do and you can be consistent at. And although you always want to strive to be better, the idea is that consistency is really a huge key in success. And so a lot of these people that I worked with over the years, I started to find things like that. Things like they were all of them were list makers. They would make small lists, big lists, but they always had a list that they were working on for their goals, short-term and long-term goals, all very goal-oriented people. And there were different philosophies and techniques that they had that all seemed to meld together. So I wanted to write a book to help people, whether performers, whether they were on stage at a podium in front of a camera, whatever it is, whether they were actors, public speakers, talk show hosts, anchors, CEOs, that you could look at one book and find those techniques that would help you to succeed as a communicator. Because at the end of the day, it's not what you say. It's a book about the fact that it's not the words. It's how you say those words that communicates the human condition that you have. And you can say I love you to somebody and make them think you hate them. It's not the words. And I've seen bad actors do Shakespeare, and it's not Shakespeare anymore. so that's what this book is, and that's what it's for. It's a resource for anybody who wants to be a better communicator, whether they're just starting out or whether they've been doing it for years. And you can go to Amazon or you can go to my website also and get that book. It's both digital and hard copy. But there you go.
That's wonderful. And then how does somebody find you to work with you to say, Bill SOS, come coach me, come be a show whisperer and how do they find you through your website? And do you work with Skype?
Yeah.
Do you work internationally? Do you fly to work with people?
Yes. Yeah, they can just go to my website, cakmis@.com. Cakmis.com. I most of my work is on the road. I travel, all over the country, and I do some international work. However, anymore, Skype is an amazing thing. I do a lot of coaching through Skype now, which has been wonderful. But I like to travel, and I like meeting new people and going to places. And a lot of what I do is also related to shows and situations. So it's hard for anyone to come to me, and many times it's hard to even Skype that because I've got to, you know, I've got to be in that show or I've got to be on that set or, you know, a few weeks ago I had to work, or I didn't have to, I worked with a CEO because he wanted to be able to communicate better to his staff, so I had to go and watch him do that so that I could help him to become a better communicator in that fashion. But yeah, you know, whatever the great thing about this job is that it's not a 9-to-5 thing. I'm on call 24/7, and when there's a problem, I have to go and fix it, which is fun.
Being a gynecologist, you know, for the baby to be born, you're on call just waiting for the birth of some new idea or some new creation or some new vision to come to life.
And the great thing is that there's no one sheet, so I have to, I'm fixing problems as they come up. I just had to work. There was a host who wasn't reading, didn't know how to read a prompter, and he wanted me to fix it, that week of that show. And there's a talent to reading a prompter, and he needed to be able to look at the audience and at the same time look at the prompter, which is in front of the camera, and in fact looking at the viewers at home. And he was staring at the prompter, just staring at it, and he wouldn't look at the audience because he didn't want to lose his lines, you know, of his a monologue. So I can't give somebody talent. So what I had to do is I made them spend money and take two huge monitors and put them right and left over the audience and back, and I took out the prompter and the camera. So, and then I went to the guy and I said, look, if you want to know your lines, you're going to have to look there and there, which meant that he had to look over the audience, right, the audience. I said, but if you want the viewers at home to see your face looking at them, you're going to have to look at the camera. And he said, I can't do both. I said, you're going to have to. You're just going to have to. And so he learned very quickly that he had to look right and left to get his lines, but he had to look in the camera to see his audience. And so the idea there is there are times when to fix the problems I have to fix, I have to go in there and duct tape work. I have to go in there and just sort of duct tape it up so that it looks great to the audience, although I haven't, you know, in that short period of time, fixed that talent. Then I have to go back later and help him learn, or help him learn how to read a prompter and make and deliver with some kind of conviction.
Yeah, and I love what you teach. It's so unintimidating too. I mean, I even love reading one of the quotes from Shanna Reed, who was the star of Major Dad, and she was saying that you have more skill humor and depth as a director that most people dream of. And I love the fact that she talks about your humor because you're a really funny guy. And the way that you see situations really, you know, just puts a joyful bent on it in a way to open that space to really to create change.
Well, thank you for that. And I, you know, I always tell people that I like to think that I'm good at what I do. However, I think that a coach is only as good as the student, and a teacher is only as good as the student. So no matter how good the teacher is, if the student isn't willing or you know, doesn't have the passion, then there's nothing, there's not much that a coach can do. But, you know, in Shanna's case, she's so talented, and she had such a great sense of humor and a great passion for life. And I think that... you know, that's a great part of talent in any profession is a passion. And, you know, again, you can't, that passion is talent, and you can't give somebody talent. So there you go.
We can certainly guide them, and you just do such an amazingly brilliant job. And I'm so grateful that you were with us today. And we only have a couple minutes left, and I always love to ask my guests as the shows are closing out, since the show is Unlimited Life, What does leading an unlimited life mean to you, or to your artists, or to your talent, do you think, to have that kind of unlimited life?
Well, I like to think that if it's true that we only go around once, then and it's not a dress rehearsal, you know, this is it, then you got to go and you got to grab all the gusto you can get, as that old commercial used to say. So I think that if you are open and you are present and you are in the present time and you have a passion and you take a minute every day to put down the phone and just look around and breathe and see and appreciate, then life is better. I think people are healthier that way. They appreciate their life more, and you know, it brings a quality not only to your life but everybody's around you. It's the way I coach, and it's the way I like to live my life. And I think that we're all blessed to be able to do that. And it's a tragedy when people don't. So, man, look up every once in a while, take a deep breath, and see where you're at and who you're with, and just take a minute to breathe. You know, somebody said once that take a breath and then realize that what you just took was a gift. And I think that's what life is about.
Oh, what a spectacular answer. That was breathtaking in itself. So, thank you. Truly, it was. I mean, that was one of the best answers I've ever heard on Unlimited Life. That was really exceptional.
Oh, well,
so thank you for that. That was lovely. And thank you so much for being with us today. And now every time I hear the I Have a Dream speech, I'm going to think about that foot launch too.
Oh, well.
Into because following your dream and vision. I love that. I love that's where you started. And
I really,
love that
really
you've opened your gifts and talents. Oh.
Yeah, I appreciate for you having me on your show and giving an energy and your own blessing to everyone. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. We look forward to having you on again and following you. And it's not what you say, by Bill Kakmus,
no,
at Amazon or on your website in kakmus.com, CAKMIS.com. And for those that you were writing like mad, and you were there with your pens and your pads and your papers and your iPhones and your iPads, getting all of this incredible information from Bill today, you can simply pick up your phone and send a text message to 55678, just to 55678, and the message is Nicole, and you can download a copy of today's show onto your phone or any mobile device and hear it over and over and over again, which I know I certainly will, because the information was just amazing. So thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate it. And happy Memorial Day weekend to everybody.
Thank you. Happy Memorial Day to you as well. And just extraordinary. Thank you.
Awesome.
Bill Kakmus, kakmus.com. What a phenomenal guest. I absolutely love the work that he's doing, being able to help people open up, get to the other side of their visions and dreams. It's not what you say. It's not about you. It's sharing those stories in a profound and deeply moving way. And I loved his description of an unlimited life. And so for Bill Kakmus, for myself, Nicole Brandon, we're wishing you an unlimited life, an unbridled life, a life where all of your visions and dreams and hopes come true, that you can lead that kind of life you always know you are meant to live. And wishing you all a happy Memorial Day weekend. Bill Kakmus, it's not what you say. Talent coach, host whisperer, show whisperer, and talent coach extraordinaire, wishing you an unlimited and a very happy